I like people who can dig into problems and find insights the rest of us miss. That's why I've called up Stuart Staniford. He has a doctorate in physics and a master's in computer science. By day, Stuart is chief scientist for the computer security company FireEye. By night, he's a well-known energy commentator, especially at theoildrum.com and on his own blog, Early Warning. Stuart, thank you for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
Sure, you're welcome. Thanks, Alex.
Well, look, your blog is called Early Warning, Risks to Global Civilization. An article you posted on May 6th certainly caught my attention and bounced all over the net. Really, it was the inspiration for this program. The title is Odds of Cooking the Grandkids. What inspired you to write that?
Well, it came out of a paper that was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences by two scientists, Stephen Sherwood at the University of New South Wales and Matthew Huber at Purdue University here in the U.S. And they were basically looking at, there is this possibility that what's called the climate sensitivity, how much the temperature is going to increase as a result of our increasing carbon dioxide, there's a small possibility that it will be really high and that temperatures will go really high. And so they were looking at which portions of the planet would become uninhabitable in that scenario, in the sense that, if you go outside in the summer, then, you just wouldn't be able to physiologically make it for any length of time.
And you wouldn't be able to do meaningful work, and we'll get to that. Well, look, we've talked about the idea of wet bulb temperature with our other guest, John Cook, but that is the key, isn't it? High temperatures and high humidity.
No, that's right. I mean, the higher the humidity, the less good sweating does you. So there comes a point where if the humidity is high enough and the temperature is high enough, then your body just can't cool itself when your core temperature gets higher and higher, and then eventually you go into heat shock.
In another article, you look at the demographics of heat deaths. Who is most likely to die?
Obviously, the elderly are more likely, or very young children if they're exposed to outside temperatures. And then people doing manual labor outside obviously face significantly higher risk.
I find that when we say that old people will die, people tend to shrug that off if they're not old, but not realizing that we're all going to be old people and our lives will matter to us. And, here in Canada, the number of people over 65 is expected to double by 2036. And sometime just 5 years from now, there will be more seniors in Canada than children age 14 and under. So we could have a lot of deaths, and even those who do survive hyperthermia, as heat strokes are called medically, the survivors often have brain damage and they require serious care. If heat waves do become more common, as some scientists predict, wouldn't this be a huge drain on families and on the economy? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, eventually, yeah. I mean, obviously it's one of those things that's going to creep up on us over the course of the century, right? I mean, it's not going to be like suddenly, there's massive heat waves, much worse than we used to. It's going to be more like with each passing decade, there's a little more likely to be really serious heat waves. And then depending on just how sensitive the climate is to our carbon emissions, could get really, really bad by the end of the century. Or if we're lucky and it's not as sensitive as it might be, then it'll be less serious. But obviously there are some parts of the planet where heat shock's already a problem, and they're almost certainly going to get somewhat worse.
Well, that was something I wanted to get to in another entry in your early warning blog. You wondered if there are parts of the world already approaching these human heat limits, and you cite the possible example in India, and that was published before the recent heat waves with thousands of deaths that just happened in India, not to mention the new record high in Pakistan, 53.7 Celsius, or 129 degrees Fahrenheit at the end of May. Can you tell us what you found out about those quarry workers in India?
Yeah, well, so I had looked at these maps that Shepard and Huber had put in their paper of, where the planet was going to become uninhabitable. And kind of the area that was already worst was a band across part of the Amazon and then a band across northern India and Pakistan. And so I was sort of scouting around looking for scientific information on that area, and I came across this study by an Institute of Occupational Health in India that was looking at the situation of various kinds of manual workers in Gujarat and Rajasthan states in northern India. And basically the conclusion of that study was these guys, particularly in this quarry in Rajasthan that was one of the study sites, were pretty much already at the limit of, there were already a number of them that were suffering quite serious symptoms like confusion and complete collapse every so often. as a result of working in this quarry. So it was pretty clear that working outside in the summer in those parts of India during a heat wave is already very marginal and something that humans can do. And obviously the recent news that you just mentioned has only made it clearer. So, you know, it's clear that those areas are going to be in trouble, you know, are already in some degree of trouble, and that's going to get worse pretty quickly.
Well, we have a form of denial, I say, here in the West that we'll all be fine due to air conditioning, but that depends upon increasing our energy supply, and if we apply it to other parts of the world, we'd have to expand world energy production just as we hit what some people think is peak oil. Your work's pretty well known on that. Do you think that air conditioning is really realistic when we start talking about India and China and Africa and South America?
It's hard to say. I mean, the problem is that oil itself is not, by and large, in the developed world anyway, used for generating electricity, which is what obviously powers air conditioners. So in principle, there's no connection to peak oil. However, it places a strain on overall energy demand, and obviously to the extent that we're meeting most of our electricity production demand from coal, there's this sort of nasty feedback loop where as the planet warms up, we need more electricity and more coal to power air conditioning, and that in turn is further increases the climate change, right? So I think that's a significant problem. And at the moment, you know, India and China and those countries are getting wealthier, and just that alone will tend to increase their demand for electricity and for air conditioning in particular. So I think, I mean, there's definitely a serious question as we get out towards the end of the 21st century, whether we're just going to end up in this sort of spiraling situation of ever hotter temperatures and ever more energy demand creating ever hotter temperatures. It seems like that would be really ugly. To the extent we're able to transition to predominantly renewable and or nuclear, you know, basis for our society, then it could be in much better shape.
Still, it's not a very pleasing picture to think that we'll have to huddle inside air-conditioned rooms possibly for a week at a time, afraid to go out.
Yeah, absolutely. And depending on where you are, I mean, you guys up in Canada, I mean, the research shows that people's happiness is strongly affected by the extremes of temperature, right? So in extremely cold climates, it tends to be the coldest portions of the year that have the most influence on people's mental state. Of when you ask them how is life going overall, you know, if they live in a place that's either very, very cold in the winter or very, very hot in the summer, that tends to have a negative effect on how happy they say they are. So, you know, up in Canada, there'll be some benefit in mitigating the winter extremes. But in places like, you know, for example, the eastern half of the U.S. that are already hot and humid in the summer, I think it's going to get just uglier and uglier over time.
In many parts of North America, our buildings are depend entirely on cheap fossil fuels for cooling. In the commercial buildings, those floor-to-ceiling glass walls don't even have windows that open, and there are huge AC costs already. And the same is true of those highly energy-inefficient monster houses that were all the rage. I wonder if we have built ourselves into an unsustainably hot corner.
Well, definitely the building stock is, you're right, it's the building stock is adapted to low to cheap energy, and building stock only turns over very slowly, and it's going to take a long time to fix it. And we're not even trying all that seriously at the moment. So, yeah, it's a big problem.
And let's look at another technical challenge. Our power grids tend to break down when the AC demand is highest. Let me give you just a couple of quick examples for the listeners. The famous Northeast blackout of 2003 occurred on a hot August day. It was over 88 degrees or 31 Celsius. People turning on their air conditioning was deemed a minor factor in blowing out that whole region over many states and in Ontario, Canada. And again, in 2006, British authorities blamed the Greater London blackout on increased air conditioning during that heat wave, and ditto the 2007 power failure in Serbia and Greece, and so on into 2009 and the Australian state of Victoria during a three-day heat wave. So most of us are counting on artificial life support by machines, but that may not be there. What are your thoughts on that, Stuart?
Well, I certainly wouldn't hold myself out as an expert on grid reliability, but it does seem that certainly the peak in electricity demand in the hotter places comes on the hottest days of the year when air conditioning is maximal. And I suppose those peaks are just going to get higher over time.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. We're talking through some of the challenges of a warming world with scientist and investigator Stuart Staniford. Stuart, on a larger scale, our cities seem poorly designed. They have become heat islands rather than cooling us down. We cut out the green. We replace it with asphalt. Everybody knows that. The UK government's Met Office predicts heat-related deaths will quadruple by 2080, and they found that cities can be up to 18 degrees Fahrenheit or 10 degrees Celsius hotter at night than the surrounding countryside. So that makes me wonder, and I realize this is just, guesswork, whether some megacities could become unsustainable in the future if climate change does occur.
Yeah, well, they're probably unsustainable now in some sense. But yeah, I'm sure you're right that the amount of energy they demand to cool them will go up and up if we don't take measures to counter that.
What draws your interest into this subject, Stuart?
I don't know, just as a matter of personality, I've always been interested in things that can go wrong, and the bigger they could go wrong, the more my interest is drawn to it. But I'm also, having a scientific training, very data-driven and very much desiring to kind of understand what do the numbers actually tell you about something. And so I kind of like to do detailed quantitative investigations of stuff. In this particular case of this Shepherd and Huber paper, it was scientific work done by others, and I was essentially just kind of making it more accessible to a popular audience.
Can you tell us some of the things that you're working through now?
At the moment, I've just figured out how to make maps in Google Earth from county-level census data. So I'm having a blast going through looking at a whole bunch of demographic variables across mainly the U.S. Because one of my big theses is that climate change and peak oil and the kind of the trends that we have of globalization and automation making for less educated folks having more and more trouble getting a job and making a decent living, these things are all going to affect us together in parallel. And so I'm kind of trying to understand at a county-by-county, neighborhood-by-neighborhood level, what kinds of areas will be most stressed by all these challenges as they all happen together. And, what kind of areas are likely to be more resilient. So the most obvious thing is if you live in a high-income area, you're probably going to be more insulated because you have the money to pay your air conditioning bill or buy oil, even and then there's less of it. Whereas people that live in kind of low-income areas and who nonetheless need to travel a lot for work or who have high needs for cooling, will suffer a lot more. So I'm sort of trying to understand the geography of where these stresses fall the highest.
So the challenges that people are working on separately may be ends of the same single piece, and you may be able to pull it out of the local level data. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, these things all interact, I think. They're not like isolated individual challenges. People have to meet them all at the same time.
I've just talked with another inquiring mind, Jack Alpert, and his parting words to me were, "Humans routinely underestimate the challenges we face and always overestimate our ability to muddle through them." Do you think we're going to be able to muddle through such things as heat stress happening at the same time that we have economic difficulties and the energy puzzle goes on?
It depends what you mean by muddle through. I mean, I think, will there be still something recognizable as civilization at the end of the 21st century? I think very likely there will. But will a lot of individuals suffer, and in particular societies, suffer significant harm as a result of these things? I think yes, they will also.
Well, there you go. When inquiring minds want to know, they can turn to the Early Warning blog at earlywarnblogspot.com or look for Stuart Stanford's work at theoildrum.com, energybulletin.net, and other spots around the net. And Stuart, I'd really like to thank you for helping us out today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure, Alex.